Welcome to Your Space Journey, where we venture into the future of space exploration and the incredible leaders who are taking us there. Here's your host, Chuck Fields.
Hello, thanks for joining me today for this special edition of Your Space Journey. We're going to take a brief break from our Around the World in Space series to bring you this episode where we focus on the upcoming mission of Mars Perseverance, launching later this week if all goes well. We're really excited about this, so I've invited some friends of mine to join us for a Zoom discussion on this exciting mission. But first I want to announce that we've been selected as winner of the 2020 Popcorn for Science category for this podcast. We'd also like to ask you if you'd do us a favor and vote for us at podcastawards.com for this podcast as well. We're trying to get nominated for the science category, and the deadline for voting for us is the end of this month, July 31st, 2020. So if you'd like to vote for us, just go to podcastawards.com and throw some love. We'd appreciate that. Now on to our exciting meeting today, where we talked about Mars Perseverance and this exciting mission.
Your space journey.
Let's start with intros. Jenna, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing now?
Yes. Hello. So I am Jenna K. Furch. I specialize in digital content creation and analysis, all things Gen Z culture. I also do some startup consulting. I met Chuck at CRS 15, the NASA social, which was life-changing for me. And shortly after I applied to my first NASA internship and got in, and I am now on my fourth NASA internship, hoping to eventually go full-time. So.
Jenna, that's incredible. It's been so neat to see you just progress in NASA, and I cannot wait till you get that full-time position, which will probably involve a suit and astronaut helmet and everything on that. Ken, tell us about yourself.
Sure. My name is Ken Ruffin. I'm the president of the local chapter of the National Space Society, and that's local in the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex, the National Space Society of North Texas. We are a nonprofit organization, the chapter, as well as the national level. And there are chapters across the U.S. and around the world, including in the Clear Lake area that Jenna may have heard of Clear Lake once or twice. Mm-hmm. We as a nonprofit provide information about NASA and about the commercial spaceflight companies to the public, whether it's during our monthly meetings or at public or private events at museums and libraries and schools and planetariums, nice. Anywhere where there might be an audience of general public of all ages that where people are likely to have an interest in spaceflight.
Wow. Ken, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. Christian, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, I'm Christian Reddy, and my day job is I'm a professor at Towson University, where I teach astronomy, mostly introductory astronomy to non-science majors, which is actually my favorite class to teach because I love talking about astronomy and the universe and the cosmos with people who may not be quite as familiar with it. And when I'm not doing that, I also have a YouTube channel called Launchpad Astronomy. So if you're on YouTube, check out Launchpad Astronomy. You'll find a couple of videos I've done here and there. And one of the early stunts that I did that led me to meet Chuck was we did a 24-hour live stream of the Ultima Thule, or then it was called Ultima Thule. Now it's called Arrokoth, the flyby from the Applied Physics Laboratory in Laurel, Maryland, and that was a real blast getting to do that and getting to meet so many people, including Chuck. So very, very flattered to be here. Thank you for having us, Chuck.
Oh, I can't believe it's been me, because that was so much fun. That was New Year's Eve, and we even had Brian May, Queen guitarist, Doctor of Astrophysics. That was such a nice time, and then just meet all the APL employees. That was just wonderful, and what a neat experience. But here we are, summer of 2020. This has been called the summer of Mars. We've seen just two countries just last week launch their missions to Mars. We had the United Arab Emirates launch the HOPE probe, and then we had China launch Taiwan-1, which has both an orbiter and lander. And now, if all goes well, we're hoping to launch NASA's Perseverance rover this coming Thursday morning. I just want to ask, just in a general question, as we're approaching this, what excites each of you about Mars in general? I mean, the world is definitely captivated by this wonderful red planet, but personally for each of you, I'd love to hear just what is it about Mars that sort of draws you to it? Jenna, can we start with you?
Yeah, totally. So I love Mars. One of my goals and one of the reasons why I got into space is because I do come from a non-STEM background, and I just got into space in the last couple of years. And I, you know, didn't really understand why people really liked space. I was like, you know, you're just launching rockets. You know, that's it. I don't get it. Until I started learning everything that NASA and other companies do. And I was like, okay, well, clearly we need to do a better job of explaining why we need to go to space and why we need to go to, you know, Mars, for example. So it's like one of my personal missions to explain, like, no, Mars has, we're not just going up there to be like, we're at Mars now. Like, there's so many reasons why we're going up there, and it's to understand, you know, not only that planet, but our planet better, which helps us understand ourselves better. And it's just like inherently what makes humans humans. And so I just think it's like the coolest thing in the entire world, but I don't know, very team Mars.
I love that, Jenna. That's great. Ken, what about you with National Space Society? I'm sure there's a lot of people that are into Mars. What does Mars mean to them and to you?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. With the National Space Society, again, the purpose is, short-term informing people about all these amazing things that are happening, all these amazing technologies, so on and so forth. So that kind of overlaps what Jenna was discussing. And specific to Mars, this is one of the destinations, as far as the naturally occurring destinations in the solar system, it's the one that's the most similar to Earth. So obviously, there would still be a need for radiation protection and oxygen and water, to say the least. Food, clothing, shelter, you know, little things like that. All of those things would have to be accounted for.
Right.
However, there would be less severe requirements, just comparatively speaking, you know, being on Mars than perhaps even being on the moon. Whether it's visitors to Mars, whether it's people living on Mars, whether it's tourists on Mars, whatever the future has in store for us. So Mars is an extremely interesting destination, and you know, there's a variety of levels of passion about Mars within the National Space Society. There are very many members who are extremely pro Mars, and there are also a large number of members that are extremely pro Moon. But because this is the season of Mars, I've gotten caught up in the Mars fever a little myself. I'm 50-50 with the Moon Mars debate, but I'm definitely caught up with Mars, and I'm just looking forward to not just a successful launch, but all the science that's going to result, you know, from this mission, you know, from the rover and Ingenuity being on Mars and sending data back. I can't wait. Even though that's like February of 2021, I still can't wait.
You know, I'm with you. I was thinking that same thing, Ken. I was thinking that the science from this mission is just going to be incredible. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But Krishna, I'm thinking about you because, you know, I was drawn to astronomy as a young child. And I remember first time I got a telescope, didn't know how to use it yet, but I remember going outside and Mars was just beautiful in the sky, just this beautiful red, red blob to me, but it just meant so much to me. So as an astronomer, what do you think people are drawn to Mars, and what is drawing you to Mars personally, I guess?
Well, I think as far as my own personal interest in Mars, I mean, yeah, you're right. For many reasons that, Ken was saying is that it's very, very similar to Earth. And, here we live on a planet that is between the orbits of two Earth analog planets, both that took very different evolutionary paths. We had three terrestrial planets that could potentially have been home to life, and two of them went wrong, at least in terms of the conditions of life. And for very, very different reasons. You know, Venus, of course, experienced a runaway greenhouse effect. Earth is, because of, you know, human climate change, we're engineering that outcome, although, you know, we have a little ways to go. Mm-hmm. Mars, on the other hand, went in the opposite direction. It underwent runaway cooling, and it lost so much of its heat. And how could that have happened? We have a planet that clearly has evidence that there used to be water in abundance, and there were seas and rivers, and we don't yet know if there's life. That's one of the things that Perseverance is going there to help address. But if it had liquid water in the past, that must mean it had a sufficiently pressurized atmosphere. And today, as Ken alluded to, Mars is lacking an atmosphere. It's virtually a vacuum. You know, it's about less than 1% the density of Earth's atmosphere. How does a planet shut down? And how does a planet just lose its heat? Yes, Mars is smaller, and we have a lot of good hypotheses as to why that happened. We'll get into more of that later. But how does an entire planet, not for nothing, Mars is not as big as Earth, but it's not, you know, it's no Mercury or Moon either. It's a substantial planet. How does a whole planet just shut itself down like that? And that's one thing I've always been fascinated by, you know, when it comes to Mars. You know, what takes a planet, out of the game the way Mars seems to have gone? And so I think anything that can help us answer those types of questions is really very exciting. And I think Perseverance is going to be really hopefully addressing the main questions about the habitability of Mars in the past, right, which I think is something that a lot of people are very interested in. Many people assume there already is life there, and it probably is not, but we don't know.
You know, that is true too. That reminds me, I'm going to do a bug. There's a book I'm reading lately called The Search for Life on Mars. Just came out. I don't know if you guys heard about it. Really good, but it talks about that. It talks about, have we already discovered that there was life on Mars? And we just, they go back to, I think in the late 90s, where they found a meteor that they believe came from Mars, and they believe there were microbe fossils on it. And, you know, the science is on both sides of it saying, you know, did this happen? Didn't it? We're not sure. So we might have already discovered it. But mm-hmm. Christian, you also mentioned this, you know, Mars Perseverance Rover, you go to NASA's webpage at nasa.gov/perseverance. And it says, Perseverance Rover, search for signs of habitable conditions on Mars in the ancient past and for signs of past microbial life itself. So here we are. I mean, we've been searching for Mars for years, sort of, but there are astrobiologists out there that say we just haven't done it to this level that Perseverance is going to do it. So I'd love to tackle down now just the Perseverance rover itself. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with it compared to Curiosity, but there's so many differences on it. And one of the things that is similar but different is that wonderful sky crane. That's how they're going to land on Mars with this rover. It's about the same size, nearly identical to Curiosity, but it weighs a little bit more. As a matter of fact, this will be the most mass we've ever, I think, landed on Mars. But the sky crane is going to, again, it has that system with rockets where it lowers the rover on a tether to the surface.
I call it the Are You Kidding Me system.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the sky crane? That's amazing. It is like, Are You Kidding Me? Anyone, what do you think about that? That's incredible.
It's just nuts. I mean, and yet we know it's possible. They've done it before.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it again. And I'm just as incredulous now at the prospect of it 8 years later as I was back in 2012. So, yeah. But it is the way to go. They're not doing it to show off. They're doing it because
right,
that is the way to get a, you know, given our current technology, that's how you get a mass of that nature, you know, something that massive onto the surface safely.
Yeah, that's true. The everyday astronaut, Tim Dodd, just came out with a great, great video on that. And he explained it about if you try to put it on top of the rocket engine is going down. Then you have to go down this huge slope and other things that could just really wreck your rover in really bad ways. So I just think that's incredible. One thing that I also thought was really neat about that is they're going to have the ability this time to record audio and video mm-hmm. of this landing. Mm-hmm. Now, Jenna, think about that, Jenna. I want you to just, what does it mean to you if you could actually see the sights and sounds of this incredible landing by the rover? What do you think that's going to inspire people for STEM? Or
for sure, for sure. I think that's really good PR for NASA, I guess. Yeah. I think, you know, NASA's done a really good job of making this mission something that, you know, the world can be a part of. I think not only being able to like see it, but also they had a competition to name the rover. I thought that was the coolest thing. And I think just the name itself, Perseverance, is really needed right now because of everything going on in the world. And if I remember correctly, they have a little plaque on the side of it that like pays homage to like healthcare workers. And I think that's also very special, you know, you guys can look it up. It's really awesome. It's really cute. But, I think, you know, it's going to have better cameras. Like you said, audio is going to have better wheels. Like it's like Curiosity's like more attractive sibling. Like it's, you know, I don't know. I love the PR and the pictures. That's what I'm most excited for, besides obviously the science, which is groundbreaking, but I can't wait. Like I'm going to be up for days before it. Just wait.
Yeah, I think it's going to be amazing too. And again, I guess the other thing about SkyCrane is not just repeating what we did in 2012, is that it actually has, I guess there's landing radar too. So it'll say, okay, is this, well, first it'll know when to deploy the parachute. It'll actually have control over that and say, if we're not quite where we want to be yet, let's hold off on deploying the parachute till a little bit later. And then as we get close to the surface, it'll sort of map the ground and say, okay, let's see if we can land closer, more accurate, safely where we can. So that'll save us from landing way over here. And we've got to drive for several months to get to our destinations. I think that's really cool.
If you don't mind, I actually wanted to talk about that new system. The first of its kind being used for the entry, descent, and landing. You mentioned the rover will have an opportunity. I shouldn't say it like that. The rover will be able to select its own landing site. And what it will do that by comparing photos that have been taken from the orbiters, you know, high definition photos, and comparing that to what its own camera sees. And if the first choice of a landing location matches, I should say the first choice of a landing location in the photo matches what the camera depicts, then, you know, it's a safe landing spot. It can land there. But if it turns out, there are several boulders that were not recognized by the orbiter, then it can choose another landing location. And it would do all of this automatically, you know, without assistance from anyone at NASA, because it wouldn't be possible, of course, for someone at NASA to steer the craft in another direction. So that's just one of many examples with this mission of science fiction becoming science fact.
See, Ken, that's amazing. I don't know why that brought back memories of, I guess, Neil Armstrong landing on the moon. As he's approaching, the computer was taking them right into some boulders, and he's like, nope, got to fly over. And like I said, Mars, we're 20 minutes at best away, so you can't really joystick that landing from here for sure.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I thought of, that Neil Armstrong example where, as you said, he saw boulders and tilted the joystick to fly horizontally above the surface of the moon and choose a different landing location. Well, instead of a human pilot doing that, it will be the computers on board, which is just outstanding to me, just the idea of it.
It is. As a software developer myself, I'm so so impressed by it, because I'm thinking, oh, what if you had, you know, too much data coming back? I mean, we had that, you know, 50 years ago with Apollo 11 and stuff like that, but it's just amazing engineering. And the other thing I'm impressed about, Ken, you mentioned this, but anyone else, I'd love your opinion on this, is we have ingenuity this time. This is going to be the first helicopter flown on Mars. This thing's less than 4 pounds. It's got two propellers or two rotors that spin nearly 3,000 RPMs. I mean, that's 10 times faster than any helicopter on Earth. It's freaking incredible. What do you guys think of Ingenuity?
Just the fact that you're flying a helicopter in that thin of an atmosphere at all, and as you say, Chuck, those rotors better be moving fast to generate any kind of lift. You're basically flying a helicopter in a vacuum. That's the best way I could describe it.
Yeah, it's crazy because a lot of people think it can be done. And again, it is a demonstration mission. They're just trying to see. I love their terminology was high risk, high reward. So even if the Ingenuity doesn't work, it doesn't impact the Perseverance mission at all. It's actually mounted underneath the rover, and the rover's going to sort of drop it off and roll a few feet forward, and then it's going to go on little hops, maybe about five within a 2-3 month period, I think, and they're not going to last more than 3 minutes each. The first one, it's going to hover like 10 feet. And I'm waiting for that video of that. I think that's going to be incredible because, Jenny, you were talking about that. And I guess I do. I think, you know, I love the science, but I also think there's an element of PR involved. And if you can say, here's a video image for this, I think that brings out the explorer spirit in a lot of us and that scientific spirit of we want to know more and we can relate more other than seeing a two-dimensional picture in a book. I just think it speaks wonders on that.
Yeah, I think it's super inspiring. And I think videos are really powerful. Video content is really in right now, especially, you know, space video content. And not only that, but I mean, this is, you know, from my understanding of it, is it's giving us like a perspective of different resources and how we can, you know, use those resources one day. And one of the things that I find really cool about this mission is MOXIE, if I'm pronouncing that right, which is, in situ resource utilization. Which is pretty much just taking CO2 from the atmosphere and making oxygen, which is really important for future missions. And so something like video, even though like that, you know, MOXIE is much different than that, but it's like making concepts easier to explain to kids or people who aren't in STEM fields. So I don't know, just I feel like pictures and video are really crucial when trying to bridge that gap between those who are in the NASA space bubble or the commercial space bubble and those who are not. Because like people like us who love space, we're like, oh yeah, totally. Like everyone likes this, you know, like why wouldn't you like space? Mars is cool. But like there's some people my age that like they have no idea what's going on and they won't know until we land, you know, man or woman on the moon or not moon, the Mars.
That's true. A woman on the moon. That would be great, too.
Yes, that, too.
I have to say, it's definitely not just people your age. It's people of all ages. I mean, there are people who, you know, still don't believe that 12 men have walked on the moon. And I'm certainly looking forward to the first woman on the moon. So that's why I specified men. But there are people who don't believe. There are people who don't even know that there have been 12 people walk on the moon. They think man walked on the moon. I've had people ask me, do you really believe that a man walked on the moon? I believe 12 people walked on the moon.
So true.
Still, agreeing with what you said, but back to the helicopter, it's going to have two cameras. And, of course, it's going to have batteries. It's going to have solar panels. But the most interesting thing about it, I mean, it's, in addition to the fact that it's just cool from a PR standpoint, is that the only thing that could be considered related to science instruments are the two cameras. I mean, that's it. There are no additional instruments to conduct science. So it's almost as if somebody whispered to NASA, it's like, hey, NASA, can you do something cool? And so it's definitely that, but also it is a proof of concept as well. It's like able to fly a robotic spacecraft in the atmosphere on another planet. You know, it's one thing to have software, you know, where someone's looking at it on their monitor, but it's another thing to actually do it and have the cameras on Ingenuity and the cameras on Perseverance.
Yes.
You know, where that video, I'm looking forward to that being relayed back to Earth, maybe with a split screen, you know, one camera from each and showing the views from each. I mean, it doesn't get any cooler than that.
I think that would ignite a lot of passion. And I know we're talking a lot of photos. And one thing I heard too about photos is one of the full color cameras, I think the resolution on Curiosity is only like 2 megapixels. Mm-hmm. And I think Perseverance is up to 20. So it's going to be a lot more powerful. Oh, yeah. But Jenna, I love how you mentioned MOXIE. Again, the ability to see if we can actually create oxygen from the carbon dioxide atmosphere of Mars, I think, is so critical. But another neat thing related to that is they have an instrument called Sherlock, or a package called Sherlock. I love the name. I'm going to mess this up, but it's like scanning habitable environments with Raman and luminescence of organics and chemicals. How did you do, Christian? Was that close?
That's exactly what it says on my press release. Yes.
Good job.
Because I wouldn't have remembered all that either.
I had to read it.
I was like, yep, that sounds right. Yeah.
Now, for the lay people out there like me, this is basically going to determine if the organics that are detected are native to Mars or if they were left there by meteorites. But what I thought was really cool is it also is going to take to help with human exploration of Mars a piece of an astronaut helmet, as well as 4 kinds of spacesuit fabric to test how they survive on the environment of Mars. So I think that's pretty cool.
I think it's also just a good point to make, I think, just to help clarify, because when people hear the term organics, wow, okay, it's going to find, organic, that's something in the produce section, right? You know, where you pay more for
a lot more.
Pay more to think you're buying something that's healthier, you know. Anyway, organics in this context really simply means anything that's carbon-based. And it turns out there's a lot of carbon in the universe. It's a very cheap and abundant element to make, and it's everywhere. Nevertheless, yes, it is a fundamental piece of life. So no, it's not searching for life or searching for biological matter, but it is essential. It is that fundamental building block. So yeah, we're looking at organic molecules and minerals here, and that means we're looking at carbon-based compounds, which is great. That's what you need. Just I like to clarify that, because
I appreciate that.
Whenever I teach it in my classroom, people are always like, "Oh, you mean like no, not really." You know, it's in there, but it's not the stuff. It's not tissue or something like that.
Exactly. Christian, I appreciate you pointing that out, because that's so true. We want to get the right message out here. The other two things I thought were kind of cool and kind of related to is even the landing zone. It's going to land in the Jezero crater, if all goes well, next February. I think February 18th, 2021. But this Jezero crater, we basically believe it's an ancient lake, that water was in there. And so we think this is a prime zone for looking for past microbial life. And one thing I thought was really cool is it actually has a sample collector on this mission, where it's going to collect samples in little pencil-sized tubes, I think up to 20 samples, that are going to be held and then later hopefully return to Earth in a future mission, where they actually have to send a rover to pick up these things and maybe fly them back to space. What do you guys think about the sample return? That's kind of a neat long-term but interesting prospect, I think.
That's something that NASA and people who've been following NASA have been waiting for decades. And just to tie into what Christian was saying, a little historical reflection, there were landers back in the 70s, Mars landers, Viking 1 and Viking 2, which at the time were expected to be the first astrobiology mission to Mars to determine whether or not there was life on Mars. And there were instruments sent that where the expectation was either the answer would be yes or it would be no. If there was evidence of organics, carbon-based molecules, then the thought was, well, then yes, there's life on Mars. unfortunately, there, though the instruments appear to detect evidence of plastics that maybe the equipment was wrapped in before it was launched to Mars, plastics that were not thoroughly and completely removed, unfortunately. So, you know, that ended up being inconclusive. I mean, we learned other scientific facts. We gained other knowledge from the Viking rovers, Viking landers, excuse me, but not the question of whether or not there is life on Mars or had been. So I, as someone who as a kid was following those Viking lander missions and was, you know, disappointed, to put it mildly, at the results.
Me too.
You know, I've been waiting ever since for not just another astrobiology mission, but I remember thinking way back then, you know, they really need to do a sample return. If they brought the stuff back, then we would know, is this biology from Mars, or did somebody not clean the equipment well enough and bring something from Earth? So for what it's worth, I've been waiting for this for a very long time.
It's nice that they're finally teeing up, you know, for those types of sample, right? Because this is not itself a sample return mission, but the fact that they're setting up such that there is a sample to return.
Right.
That's cool. It's pretty forward thinking. And I just love the fact that there's all these, what I like to call forward thinking, you know, experiments on board. You know, let's test out some spacecraft materials. Let's test out some spacesuit materials.
That's cool. I think it's brilliant. It is amazing how it's going. I do want to kind of go into kind of a last reach effort here. A lot of talk. Elon Musk, SpaceX has been working really hard on the Starships. We have, you know, hopes to get people to Mars soon rather than later. And even speaking of forward thinking, one thing that surprised me is I did interview the United Arab Emirates about their space goals, and they actually are doing, they have an initiative for 2117 to establish a colony on Mars by then. Yeah. So again, this is not just an Elon Musk thing. It's not just a NASA thing. This is, the world wants us to go to Mars. So kind of crazy question. Would you go, and what do you think about a human colony on Mars? Jenna, would you go to Mars if they reach out and they said, here you go, here's your first NASA position, put on the suit, we're going to send you there?
I would go. I would be very surprised if I was the first person they asked. But I mean, I'd be good comedic relief. So that's, you know, one reason why I can see them sending me. But besides that, obviously I would go. That would be the coolest mission ever. As far as colonizing Mars goes, I think, yes, I think that's, you know, obviously something we need to do one day. I think humans can be very dirty. So I think with the right policy in place, I think that's definitely something that I'm like on board with. And I think we should do once we like fully comprehend what we're going to do once we get there with regulations and all that fun stuff. But that's good, my opinion.
Good point.
Thanks.
Ken, how about you?
Yeah. Yes or no, would I go? Actually, no. And the reason is that someone who love space and really understands the benefits, you know, that come from just this concept of people moving to Mars to settle Mars. Someone's got to stay here and explain it. And, you know, that's been my passion for the last several years through the National Space Society. So I would stay and, you know, follow as often as possible, you know, all the developments from the mission as far as people traveling to Mars once they arrive. I mean, that would just occupy all of my free time. So somebody's got to explain it to the world that, no, those people are not crazy. I actually had a conversation about that just a few days ago. I said, yeah, there are people that I know who are seriously interested in moving to Mars. And I told them the same thing. I would stay here because I want to explain it to the world why it makes sense. No, they're not crazy. And it's so much more important than most people realize.
Ken, I love that. Now, Christian, I tell you, I'm thinking, I mean, if you do a 24-hour video when we flew past Arrokoth, I'm thinking, would you take Launchpad Astronomy to the Red Planet and broadcast from there? Would you go to Mars? And what do you think about a human colony?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I like breathing air, you know, and water. I think pure for only reason for the views on the YouTube channel. Yes, I would go provided I can come back afterward. I wouldn't want, in other words, I always look at Mars like awesome place to visit. Wouldn't want to live there, but mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd go. I'd go as long as I can come back. Now, if it's a permanent set it up shop, pitch a tent, you're staying here forever, I might be like, because we got to do a lot of terraforming to make Mars into that kind of mm-hmm. And that's not going to happen anytime soon.
Ever.
But yeah, I couldn't turn down an opportunity to explore with my own eyes and senses, at least as many senses as I can use through an EVA suit. I'd have to go. I'd have to go. But then I got to come back.
That makes sense. Yeah, Ken, go ahead.
I'd like to comment on the terraforming mm-hmm. concept, which everybody knows about it. If you've read or seen any science fiction, terraforming comes up. Well, NASA actually has a very short webpage where they explain that the idea with terraforming is, of course, making Mars more Earth-like. Mm-hmm. And NASA says that if all of the carbon dioxide that was present, whether it's in the soil, in the rocks, frozen at the polar caps, in any and every location that you could think of, if all of that carbon dioxide was released, Christian said earlier that Mars's atmosphere is 1% the thickness of Earth's atmosphere. Well, if all the carbon dioxide was released, then that thickness or that density would increase from 1% to 7%. Mm-hmm. And that's as far as it would go. So that's one serious issue. The second serious issue is that Mars's atmosphere used to be much thicker than it is now, and it went from whatever percentage it used to be at its maximum down to 1% because Mars does not have a magnetic field. Mm-hmm. Well, if you increase Mars's atmospheric density up to 7% of Earth's, Mars still doesn't have a magnetic field. So, you know, the atmosphere has been stripped away by the solar wind, and that's being measured by the Mars MAVEN orbiter and other orbiters from other countries. Well, you can make the atmosphere more dense, but it would suffer the same fate as the atmosphere that's already been stripped away. So right. I've broken many hearts, you know, of people who are just passionate about terraforming Mars.
Right.
You know, I've heard people say, hey, if they terraform Mars, I'll go. And I said, well, I guess you'll be here with me on Earth.
You'll go, but you just can't stay. It's a temporary fix until there's a way to kickstart the magnetic field, you know, and get that going again. And I'm sure there's some people working on it. I personally don't follow the ins and outs of terraforming planets, but you are absolutely right that there's, without a magnetic field, it's really, really hard to maintain an atmosphere for very long. That solar wind will strip it away eventually. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that goes back to my earlier point. I think it's a great place to visit. I'm not sure I'd want to live there.
Yeah,
but I couldn't turn down a chance to see it for myself.
Meanwhile, we have this beautiful blue planet that all of us are part of right now. And I'm thankful for it because that's how I met each of you. So thank you for being a part of this wonderful planet with us. Thank you for joining us today to talk about this exciting mission to Mars. I'm so excited about it. But again, thanks each of you, Jenna, Ken, Christian. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Your space journey.
Wow, I really enjoyed our conversation about Mars Perseverance today. Hope you did too. If you'd like to learn more, just go to nasa.gov/perseverance. Tune in, make sure you watch that launch. Again, if all goes well, it'll be launching this Thursday, July 30th, 2020. We cannot wait. I want to extend a special thanks to my friends Jenna, Ken, and Christian for joining us today. If you'd like to learn more about them, I have links to their websites in the show notes for this episode, so just check those out. And we'll be returning later in a couple weeks with our Around the World in Space series. We'll be featuring ESA, the European Space Agency, followed by the Canadian Space Agency. So be sure to subscribe if you haven't already so you don't miss those exciting episodes. But I want to thank you for joining us. I certainly do appreciate it. I'll see you next time. God bless.